Okay, hi everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
If she cared for her husband and if she cared for America, she would tell Joe Biden that it is time to let go.
Even in Australia, they are talking about First Lady Jill Biden. I'm going to show you why. Not tell you why, show you why. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. All right, and you know where we're going to begin? We're going to begin, strangely enough, I never thought these words would come out of my mouth as a guy who's been doing news for so long. We're going to begin by showing you the cover of Vogue. Vogue magazine. Here's something I probably never opened the pages of. Here, take a look. There you go. Talk about bizarre timing, right? I mean, there is the First Lady of the United States of America appearing in Vogue, on the cover, no less. I suppose the thinking at the White House was that the president would have this killer debate against Donald Trump, just like he did 4 years ago, and then right after that, Jill Biden would appear on the cover of Vogue magazine, and everybody would be talking about the Bidens and their glamorous and powerful mystique as a couple, right? Well, oops. You know what they say about the best laid plans of mice and men? Actually, nothing could be further from that plan. Nothing could be further from that narrative than what has actually happened. Instead, the debate made the president appear to be horribly unfit, and the Vogue cover is making the First Lady look like a power-hungry opportunist. Intentional or not, this is how the world is reacting to Jill Biden. Watch.
She appeared on the cover of Vogue today, and I don't know how someone could be so tone deaf. And Vogue, what are you doing? Jill Biden is right now being accused of elder abuse by encouraging her husband to continue his election campaign, which is like watching a car crash play out in slow motion every day. Jill Biden told Vogue in this interview, "We will not let those 90 minutes define the 4 years he's been president. We will continue to fight." She's absolutely delusional, no matter what side of politics you're on. If she cared for her husband and if she cared for America, she would tell Joe Biden that it is time to let go.
Wow. So why is that Australian commentator saying that? Because since the debate, I don't know if you've seen it, but you're about to, Jill Biden has been appearing with her husband at rallies, and she's coming across kind of desperate and somewhat dishonest. It's almost like she's trying too hard to convince people that her husband is as fit as a fiddle and as sharp as a tack, when everybody knows that's just not true, Jill. This is something slightly Shakespearean at play here. And if there's one act of desperation that stands out in this tragedy, it's this one. Watch.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. Let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do? Lie!
Ouch. Manila, I'll tell you what I think in a minute. I want to know what you think as you just watch that together with our viewers.
Just cringy, Rick. I mean, that is how I spoke to my son when he was potty training a couple of years ago, in that sing-songy tone, expressing how proud I was of him making it all the way to the potty without any major accidents. Yay! Yeah. Nobody should be talking to the commander-in-chief like that, Rick. I mean, if you gotta talk to him that way, hello, Houston, we've got a problem. Now, going back to the cover itself, though, I think it's safe to say that this has always been part of the media cheerleading the Biden administration. This is the third time that Jill has been featured in Vogue, not only as a cover model, but splashy features fawning all over the First Lady. Now, worth noting, ironically, the only First Lady who was actually a professional model.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Melania Trump. And
right.
She was the only First Lady since the 1930s not to grace the cover or have a feature even done about her. But Rick, the editor Anna Wintour notoriously objected to the idea of having Melania Trump in her magazine because Wintour is a known anti-Trumper. Every first lady has graced the pages, if not the cover of Vogue, going as far back as Eleanor Roosevelt.
That's fascinating.
We got Jackie O in there, Nancy Reagan, Hillary Clinton, Pat Nixon, Laura Bush. I mean, you name it. But in recent years, especially in the case of Michelle Obama, the magazine has served to influence many female voters. Biden has been shedding support among the middle-class mom demo. So that's exactly who buys this magazine. So this is an old play from the playbook, using the first lady to boost the husband's numbers. Of course, in this instance, the release of Vogue coming on the heels of Joe's disastrous performance at the debate, it comes off cheap, bad timing. Yeah. But make no mistake, Rick, the whole point of using Jill is to give Biden a bump ahead of these elections.
Well, and it'll also do well for the magazine, by the way. And the fact that she had to look at the audience and then tell them what to say. Usually when you say, what do you think? Who's going to win this game? And the audience screams, we are. But she actually said, what did Trump do? And then she told them, he lied. She didn't wait for them to respond. She basically is cheerleading, and the whole thing just looks horrible. And when they're talking about this in Australia, you know it's become a bit of a big deal. Here's another big deal. Russia has just assumed the rotating presidency at the United Nations Security Council. That's important. One of the first things they did was send a stern warning to Israel. Why? Israel is apparently preparing to send weapons to Ukraine to use against Russia, and they're not just any weapons. 8 different U.S.-made Patriot defense systems. From a geopolitical point of view, I believe this seems both foolhardy and provocative on the part of Israel to do something like this, especially considering their expanding conflict right now with Hezbollah. Now, take a look at this headline. I want to put this up for you so you can see this. There it is. It says, U.S. officials concerned Israeli offensive on Hezbollah could drag in Russia. Talk about poking the sleeping bear, right, Manila? I mean, think about this. Russia has been rather temperate regarding Israel's massacre in Gaza. They haven't been like South Africa or other countries. So why would Israel provoke Russia, knowing that Russia has ties to Iran, which has ties to Hezbollah? And is the U.S. really concerned about this, or are they in on this game as well? It seems crazy to me. Your comment.
So I would say this is, at the very least, a sticky situation between Israel and Russia, because it's well established that the two countries have fairly warm ties, and this latest move could really put a chill on that relationship. Vladimir Putin has been relatively soft on his criticisms of Netanyahu's actions in Gaza until recently. Netanyahu himself began showing overt support for Ukraine in this conflict with Russia. So now, with this talk of giving Ukraine its stock of like 8 or 9 retired Patriot batteries, this is going to exacerbate these increasingly strained relations, Rick. So worth pointing out also, the Patriot air defense systems that Israel is considering to give to Ukraine are old ones from the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah, but who cares?
But Israeli defense experts say that they were worthless in taking down Iraqi Scuds back in 1991. But since the Ukrainians are pleading for them, Israel's, you know, got some laying around, it would appear the U.S. side did some finagling to make this deal happen.
I don't care if they're giving them pea shooters. It's not the weapons. It's the fact that you're getting involved in a war so that whatever you're sending will be used to attack Russia. And the message that that's sending to Russia is the real story here, that it's just
the principle.
It's geopolitically stupid, it seems to me. I don't know. I'm not the ambassador from Israel. Here's another big story. You ready for this one? You're not going to believe this. Boeing can't stay out of the headlines, and they can't seem to do anything that doesn't attract negative attention. I mean, let me take you through this litany. Ready? Even their private space business is now a problem for them. Watch this report.
Tonight, high above Earth's atmosphere, two astronauts are waiting to find out when they can return home.
Let's go forward into Starliner.
At the time, NASA astronauts Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore gave this tour of Boeing Starliner, docked since June 6th at the International Space Station, they thought they'd only be there for days.
just super happy to be here on the International Space Station.
But now, after a series of delays, a planned 10-day mission has become a weeks-long stay with a return date unknown.
Yeah, stuck in space for some time. At some point, I guess they're going to be told, all right, don't worry, we're going to be able to get you down. Wait, as they say in some of these game shows on television, wait, there's more. Now this, last night, you ready for this? A plane started nosediving in mid-flight amid what's described as a horrible turbulence. Here's that report.
Chairs bent, parts of the plane's roof falling down, blood on the back of seats. This is the mess on board Air Europa flight UX45 after 3.5 seconds of mayhem when the plane hit terrifying turbulence. Footage taken on board shows a man being helped from the overhead compartment. Babies screaming in the background.
Hold on, I'm still not done. Wait, there's more. Boeing, it was just announced, is now on the verge of signing a plea deal with the U.S. government, the Justice Department, that allows it, or will allow it, if they sign this thing, to waive a trial and instead pay a fine and probation for the 737 MAX plane crashes that killed almost 350 people. And we've taken you through that story many times in the past. Manila, I guess the only thing I can say to you at this point is, you thought you were having a bad week? Try being Boeing.
What? I gotta tell you, Rick, Boeing's reputation is, I would say, irreparably harmed by this nonstop bad news of their own making.
Yeah.
This was their own fault. Hubris and greed became paramount, so quality has kind of taken a backseat. Public confidence in the brand, especially when those flying commercial, like we just saw, has taken more of a nosedive than what we just saw in that video. Thankfully, that latest scare, you know, didn't have deadly results. But remember that Boeing jet, the Alaska flight back in January, where the door ripped right off mid-flight. Now you add in their Starliner troubles. I mean, Rick, I don't know if AAA is in space yet, so I don't know who they're going to call for a tow up there. But if you ask me, what I would tell the suits at Boeing is maybe you ought to focus on the bread and butter of
yes.
your company first. And that is making the commercial jets that are airworthy before you look up to the cosmos. Because if you can't make a jet that can stay up at 36,000 feet, then you shouldn't be diverting limited resources and focus on trying to keep up with the likes of SpaceX, because you ain't doing it. Yeah. They have people's lives in their hands, Rick.
That's a good point and well said. And by the way, speaking of looking up, how did that guy end up in the luggage compartment?
I'm
still trying to figure out. We found the guy up there, and I'm thinking, how did he get there? I don't know. I just don't know. But I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a story anyway. Manila, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Thank you for the conversation. By the way, there's something else that we're going to be telling you about when we come back. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban is in Ukraine, and he's meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky about a ceasefire. Talk about big news, right? George Samueli is in Budapest. He has a keen understanding of Orban and all that he's about, which is why I'm very much looking forward to speaking with this young man you see right there before you. Do not go away. We will be right back. Hey, welcome back. And we're joined now by the right guy to talk to about this particular story, George Samueli. George is a senior research fellow at the Global Policy Institute, and he's good enough to join us now from Budapest. Budapest. Maybe that's the way they call it there. Budapest. Thank you very much. Hey, thanks so much, George, for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
So, wow. Woke up this morning to the news that Viktor Orban is in Kyiv. Apparently, I've seen the picture, so it must be real. He's actually meeting with Zelensky. What's going on, George?
Well, Hungary has just taken over the chairmanship of the European Council. That's a rotating business, so Hungary will be running the European Council for the next 6 months.
Huh.
So it is a mark of respect, courtesy towards Zelensky that he, you know, he's coming to meet him. But the message that he conveyed to Zelensky is one that Orban has conveyed many, many times in the past, which is this war has to stop, and the sequence of events is not, well, let's send some more arms, let's send some more artillery shells, let's keep destroying a little bit more in order to get Russia to the negotiating table. He said, no, the sequence should be, let's have a ceasefire immediately, and then we can start negotiations. That, of course, is not Ukraine's position. It's not NATO's position. It's not the EU position. It's not the UK position. Not the Biden administration's position. So I don't think it's going to get very far. But there is also a sore point between Hungary and Ukraine, which is that there are 150,000 ethnic Hungarians who live in Ukraine. And Hungary has been very unhappy for quite a long time about the treatment of these Hungarians. So, you know, every time there's any meeting with Zelensky, the issue of these Hungarians is brought up, and Zelensky doesn't really give a very satisfactory account of the way these Hungarians are being treated.
I'm thinking right now, George, that there might be some kind of opening with Zelensky. I've been reading a lot lately that it's finally starting to dawn on him that he is getting his butt kicked by the Russians, which everybody in the world knows, except maybe people who watch NBC and CNN. And on top of that, let me add something. There's a fly in the ointment, you might say, right? There's something else going on. If he watched that debate between Biden and Trump, he's got to figure there's a real big chance that the next president of the United States he's going to be dealing with will not be Biden. In fact, it'll be somebody who is very much in favor of ending this war and maybe not necessarily satisfactorily to the needs of Zelensky. So that do you think that could be spurring him on to want to perhaps even consider a ceasefire at this point?
Well, I don't think he's considering a ceasefire at this point, and he certainly isn't going to be persuaded to it by Orban.
Noted.
I mean, he's coming to Washington in a few days for the big 75th birthday party for NATO. NATO will probably offer him something a little short of membership, but a little bit more than what was offered to him last year at Vilnius. And they're going to, again, offer him more money, more arms, and so on. But, you know, you're absolutely right. Trump is the big unknown, and it's now looking as if Trump will be the winner in November. I mean, it wasn't just the debate. I mean, the last week has been just one series of triumphs for Trump after another. He's had a number of very favorable Supreme Court rulings. Mm-hmm. And there's also the polls, which everyone had expected would hurt Trump after the conviction in the Manhattan court. That didn't happen. In fact, Trump increased his lead. So it is now looking as if Trump is cruising to victory. Now, the problem with Trump, as you know, is no one really knows what he's thinking. I mean, we thought he was thinking one thing in 2016, then during his first term in office, he really didn't accomplish any of the things that he promised.
But hold on. He's been very specific in saying that he seems to be sick and tired of this man, Zelensky, coming to Washington, and every time he shows up, they hand him money. He seems to be saying, he ain't going to get no money from me. So that's not a message I would want to hear if I was Zelensky.
Well, I don't think he has said he's not going to get any money from me. You're right. He said, Zelensky is you know, one of the best salesmen in the world. Yeah. But that's not a negative as far as Trump is concerned. What the hell is Trump other than, you know, one of the best salesmen in the world? So that may be a compliment. And he also says, well, I really had very good relations with Zelensky. Zelensky helped me out during the first impeachment. And he often boasts that he was the first to send lethal aid to Ukraine. So, we're in this conundrum with Trump. We don't know which way he's going to go. I mean, anyone who says, I know what he's going to do, I think, you know, he's going to be wrong. I would have thought just common sense would suggest that he doesn't want this to burden his administration. You know, he'll want to end this war as early as possible. I mean, just common sense, because in no time at all, this will be Trump's war. And he doesn't want the, you know, the tag of Trump's war. So I think he would want to bring it to an end as soon as possible.
Let me differ with you on that. And I don't think we're arguing Trump versus Biden so much, but the tactics of the neocons. I think if I were a neocon, if I was Sullivan, if I was somebody at the State Department or the CIA, I would want Biden, because I want a little old man who is barely awake so that he can be the president, but I actually make all the decisions. I think with Trump in office, it's going to be a little tougher this time around for the neocons to control him and tell him what to do. That's what I think. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. I agree. I do think that the, you know, for want of a better term, the deep state, the military industrial complex prefers to have Biden in there to Trump, because Biden has always been a very reliable puppet in their hands ever since he first emerged on the scene in the 1970s and 1980s. Yeah. He's always been a neocon. He's always been an interventionist. So they're absolute, and now he's pretty kind of pretty much Gaga. So yeah, absolutely, they want him in there, which is why I think there are going to be a lot of things between now and November to try to trip Trump up. I mean, I think, you know, the deep state, right, I don't think it's just going to sit on its hands and allow Trump to take office. I mean, we saw what they did before the 2016 election. You have to think they've got a lot of dirty tricks up their sleeve before November.
But let's close the loop a little bit here. We said that the neocons are going to be able to control Biden, less able to control Trump. The neocons are the ones who are controlling and pushing the war in Ukraine. Therefore, having Trump there will not be good for those who want to continue the war in Ukraine. That's my enthymeme, right? Doesn't that make sense?
I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't think the neocons want Trump in there at all. And, you know, I think they know Biden is a very reliable from their point of view. They know Biden will continue with this war. Trump is just something that is just an unknown and unlikely to be easily controlled, because I think this time around he will put together a much better team than he did during his first term. I think a team that is much more into America first, no more stupid wars, no more interventionism, no more regime change wars. I think those kinds of people will be around Trump in this time around. It won't be like, you know, what he did last time, you know, bringing in a whole lot of people who were basically just neocons.
Yeah, you mean, so it sounds like Pompeo and Bolton need not apply. Thank you very much.
I don't think so.
So, one final thing. Does Zelensky see this thing that you and I just went through, this drill down that you and I just did? Don't you think Zelensky's done that drill down in his mind as well, which gets us to the original conversation you and I started with?
I think so. And the thing to look out for is this Brazil-China peace initiative. I think that's supposed to take place sometime before the G20 meeting. I don't think Zelensky wants to piss off China. I don't think he wants to piss off Brazil.
Yeah.
So if Brazil and China say, well, let's hold a peace conference to which we invite both Russia and Ukraine, Ukraine will have to show up. Ukraine cannot just simply say, well, we're not going to sit at the same table as Russia. I think Ukraine has to show up. And that will be very interesting, because then, you know, this will be the first time that Russia and Ukraine will be at the same table. And again, Russia also wants to, you know, maintain good relations with China and be respectful. So that, I think, is the one to look out for, see if whether that's going to lead to some form of negotiations.
And we're out of time, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about one other thing I do want to talk about with you at some future date, and that is this move afoot that is taking place both in Europe and possibly in the United States, where we're seeing a little bit of a shift toward the Orbans and the Trumps in not just Hungary, but places like France and Great Britain as well. George, always a pleasure to speak with you, my friend. Thanks so much. You're a delight.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, Rick.
And that's our show. Remember always to be looking outside of your own box. That's what we think. I mean, we think truths don't live in boxes, which is why we do the shows we do, and we do them in the way that we do. I'm Rick Sanchez. By golly, we'll be looking for you next time right here.